So this is my favorite part of the meeting. I get a chance to introduce the main speaker. So I've seen this gentleman around the room. He always is very articulate. I think we're in a real treat to hear him tonight. Without any further ado, let's welcome Gregory up to come on up and tell us about it.
All right. Dynamite.
Yeah.
Dynamite, that 10-minute speaker. I didn't know what I was doing. I called her and like, hey, whoa, okay. So off to a great start. I don't know how, I'm an alcoholic named Gregory.
Hey,
okay. So I know how I want to start this. And also how I want to end it. The middle is like kind of up to God. So I always like to start with literature, okay? Because that's the basis of my recovery, is that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the accompanying literature. That's where I get what I like to call clean water, because I came in here like a glass of dirty water. And it's a simple illustration. If you take enough clean water and pour it into a glass of dirty water, that glass of dirty water is going to become clean. So that's what I do. I stay in the literature from day one. Okay? So the first thing I wanna share with you is out of the Daily Reflections. It's January 29th reading. Okay? And this is what it says. The joy of sharing. Okay? Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 89. Okay? It goes on to say, to know that each newcomer with whom I share has the opportunity to experience the relief that I have found in this fellowship fills me with joy and gratitude. I feel that all the things described in AA will come to pass for them as they have for me if they seize the opportunity and embrace the program fully. So that's how I want to start. Just let that sink in. And I'm letting it sink in too, because I suffer from the same self-centeredness, and I want to remind myself out loud what I'm doing here is to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, mainly for the newcomer, but then too to preach to the choir a little bit. Okay? So I had the ism, okay, the I, self, and me before I had the alcohol. I was raised in a family of alcoholics, okay, who were powerful, emotional, passionate, dysfunctional, raw, and as a child, I absorbed all that, you know, and that's what formed my I, self, and me, was a lot of those attributes, and there was a lot of love too, okay, and then just practical life lessons, you know, and I gathered all that, and that all became my code, and I went through life with that and brought that to the first drink, okay. I brought an I, self, and me to the first drink that was unrestrained. I didn't have any self-restraint. I didn't have any internal dials to say stop. I had, my grandmother used to often say, boy, you got no quitting sense. Okay, because I didn't know when to quit. I saw this experiment with these little kids, and they take some kids and they put some candy on the table, right? And the guy goes, okay, there's one piece of candy there, and I'm gonna leave the room, and if you wait, when I come back, I'll give you two more pieces of candy, okay? It's something to do with emotional development, right? But I can tell you right now, I would have been like, yeah, go ahead, leave. Go ahead, leave, right? I had no self-restraint. I would have ate that candy, and then I would have figured out a way to manipulate him. Oh, mister, please. Please give me another piece of candy. Right? That would have been me, okay? So that's kind of the story of my life, unrestrained and unrestricted, until I hit some restraint or some constriction. Then I would like shape up just long enough to get you to look away, and then I'm back at it again, doing my thing, right? So that's what I brought to the first drink at age 15. Okay, and it was like, I remember my 16th birthday. I went out to a nice dinner with my mom and her friend to this place called the Whale's Tail down in Ventura, California. And it was my 16th birthday, and I had white wine and a delicious steak and lobster dinner, and it felt right, man. It was like a rite of passage, and I felt like I'm a big boy now. And I even started experimenting with a little bit of cussing around, you know. I thought, well, you know, you give me an inch, I'm going to, because up to that point, if you cuss around my mom, you get a right in the smack in the chops. So then now I'm 16, I'm a little bit tipsy, you know, and that was some good shit, Ma. Oh! Right? So this is the big time. Well, like I say, I was raised by alcoholics, and they were my heroes. Those are the people I wanted to be like. Those are the people that I wanted to drink like and live like, because I worshiped them. I loved those people. Okay? And so in the big book, when it starts talking about, you know, the obsession to drink like normal people, I never had that. I was obsessed with drinking like the professionals. You know, my grandmother was known for saying, well, see if I can get this right. Okay, but I really want to take you there. I drink any one of you motherfuckers under the table. Okay? So that's what I wanted to be. So when I got to high school and I was an athlete and I was a student, and my drinking was competitive. It was competitive right away. There was a game out at that time called quarters. Okay? And it involved taking a quarter and you somehow get it to go into a glass. And if you can make it, then you get to pick somebody to drink. And I should have been a red flag because I was picking myself. You know, I'll drink. You know, or like a bum fighter, you throw the game. Yeah, you throw. So right away, my drinking took on a characteristic of where I had something to prove. You know, I wanted to run with the big dogs. I always wanted to be like the older kids, and that was the nature of my drinking. You know, it was like very macho and competitive, and see how much you can drink and not throw up, or drink till you throw up and keep drinking, right? So then I consumed alcohol in that fashion, unrestricted, unrestrained, all through high school. And then I went to college, same thing, and I participated in other forms of alcohol, okay, as we like to say. Because I like to keep drinking, and there's other forms of alcohol where you can just keep drinking, you know, and so I like those also. So my disease progressed, and some pivotal things happened just to illustrate where the disease took me. I overdosed in 1992, okay, and that was interesting because I did a lot of things over like a 4-day period with no sleep and just beer. I was always a beer guy, you know, like top shelf for me was like 151. That was fancy, you know what I mean? So I did all these things, and it was a long 4 days. On the fourth day, I left this house that I was like flopping at, you know, and okay, the first thing I did was I woke up, right, and I thought, or no, I didn't woke up, I got up because I couldn't sleep because of everything I was doing, and I went to the kitchen, and there was this moldy bread, right, just just really moldy and disgusting. But the mold was this certain blue color that other things that I like to take had the same blue tinge. So I thought, if I eat this bread, then things are going to happen. Okay, so that was the first thing. And then I put on an orange Speedo, okay, and I was about 120 pounds, and a black cowboy hat, and some moccasins, and I strapped a guitar to my back that had probably 3 strings, and I left the house, okay? And this is down in Ventura, California, so I'm making my way up this street, and I get by the old jail, and all these policemen converged on me, okay? And there's about 6 squad cars, and they took me to mental health, which was appropriate, and they let me go. So then later on that night, I went home, and I don't know, my mind was all messed up. And so what I did was I took a page out of one of my heroes' books, my uncle Frankie, and I put on 2 of every piece of clothing. I don't know why, but that's what I did. It was a timing thing. And I got ready to leave the house, and my mom said, hey, wait a minute, say hello to this person, whoever that was. And I collapsed right there and started dying. Well, I didn't die. But the next day, I was back at the liquor store. Like, you know, so that happened. Anyway, yeah. So that was 1992. In 1996, I decided I had enough, and I wanted to stop doing other things, just become a pure alcoholic on the weekends. Okay? So because I thought my problem was that I just needed to be able to pass a urine test and get a good paying job, and then everything would be all right. I thought money was the problem. So that's what I did. I stopped doing certain other substances that would stay in your system, and I got a good job, and I just drank alcohol on the weekends, and I went to AA meetings Monday through Friday. Okay? And that was my program. And I got a sponsor, and he gave me worksheets, and I would scribble something fancy on them and hand them back, and then Friday would come, and I would go clubbing. And that worked for about another year, okay? I ended up back in California in, like, 97. And I was, and that program was working for me, just drinking, because my family was a bunch of functioning alcoholics, so I thought, okay, well, I can be like them. I can get hammered, and then I can go to work, and everything will be fine. Well, what happened was I got fired from a job, and I thought, well, now I got time on my hands. I can do the other things in addition to, because I was going to get an unemployment, and that's like a vacation to an alcoholic like me. You know, that's like time to party. So that's what I did, and I got back into the other things. Well, that led me into some yes, okay? And I started interacting with lower companions, okay, they call them. And I started doing those other forms of alcohol again. And there was a criminal element to the lifestyle I was living now, you know. I was the getaway driver. Well, I was the guy in the car waiting nervously for some things to happen that I really didn't want to know about, okay, but was willing to, like, be involved with just a little bit to get what I thought I needed to get. Well, eventually that caught up with me, and I ended up in jail. Like, a lot of people get to go to treatment. Oh. Lucky people. I talked to a guy that was in treatment tonight just before I came here. My number is still on a list that they call and do a contact call. And so I talked to this guy, and I said, I always encourage people who are in rehab to stay, because I never got to go to rehab. I got to go to jail. Okay, and it was in the Santa Barbara County Jail on the farm, which I was told was the good part of jail, right? I don't understand that. I don't understand, like, that there's a good part of jail, but anyway, apparently, I was in the good part, okay? Didn't feel that way to me. It was traumatic. It was like the worst 14 days of my life, because remember, I'm a person that's unrestrained. Restraint just really twists my head apart. You know, somebody saying, do this, do that, stop, go. It's like, ah! It was traumatic. It was traumatic. But that's not the worst part. The worst part of jail for me was the toilets with no walls. Okay? That's what really got, I was like, okay, I never want to go back. So when I got out, I was like, okay, I didn't necessarily want to quit drinking. I wanted the consequences of my drinking to stop. So when I got out, I had that gift of desperation. That was my bottom. 14 jail days in jail turned me around and got me willing. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and not necessarily wanting to stop drinking, but if I had to stop drinking to keep from going to jail, then okay, I would do that. And I got a nudge from the judge and I got a court card and I came to meetings and it was suggested that I do 90 meetings in 90 days. And so I had no other prospects, and so I wanted to go to 365 meetings in 90 days because I thought, okay, if I do that, then I'll have a year, right? Oh, always trying to take a shortcut. It didn't work out like that, but I was off to a good start. I was saturated in the AA mojo after 300 meetings in 90 days, you know. It was just, I mean, and I went to those meetings in every capacity because I understood that third tradition, okay? I was like, you can't kick me out of here. Look, your code says you can't kick me out, you know. So I went to those meetings and fell asleep and snored. Probably, I don't know, because I was asleep, you know, but when you wake up and it's like the hand-holding part is what you wake up to and everybody's looking at you like, man, I hope you hurry up and relapse. You know, when I wake up and, I'm off to a good start, right, in recovery, and so I started taking suggestions, 90 meetings in 90 days. Get a sponsor, start working the steps. And I didn't work the steps to, like, be healed or to experience, like, wellness. I worked the steps because it seemed like all the cool people had worked the steps. All the dudes that, like, rode motorcycles and, like, that's all they talked about was I worked the steps. And I was like, I want to be somebody. You know, I still had that competitive thing, and I want to run with the big dog. Well, who's the big dog? The step people. Hey, let me do that. So I worked through the steps. I got a sponsor. And just a minute about sponsors. Like, I've had several sponsors, and I've gathered something from each of them. And that first sponsor, what he gave me was like a hardcore don't look back approach to recovery, you know. And he would say things like, job, no job, money, no money, old lady, no old lady, don't pick up the first drink, you know, just real hardcore. And I came in, and you know there's always people jumping out of the boat. So it was like I watched a lot of people relapse, but I had that singular focus, you know, that I wasn't going to look back. And if you weren't on the same page as me, well, step to the side, get out of my way, because I'm going that way, away from the first one. And I was, the only thing I had going was anger and hostility. And in a pinch, that's what I whipped out. You know, if somebody started talking about something that threatened my sobriety, I hit it with anger and hostility. You know, I had no compassion, I had no tolerance for any of that. It was no nonsense. Okay, and I stayed sober like that in Santa Maria, California for 3.5 years, and then I moved to, it's 9 o'clock, right? That's it?
Yeah.
Okay, we're good. We're good. Okay, so 3.5 years I was in Santa Maria, so I'm not unfamiliar with Santa Maria. Some of you are saying, where is this guy? What are you talking about? I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin for the past 10 years. I've been back here for 5 months. Okay, so let that sink in. So 3.5 years, I was militant, and I was rubbing elbows with the big dogs, and I thought I was somebody. I was sober. That's it. No change in character. And then some other stuff like tripped me out, like, you know, at first, and I was kind of caught up in the cosmetics, you know, how things look and sound and where I fit in. And they say something like, you know, I hear somebody in the meeting, they would say, yeah, I had to white knuckle it. I forgot, how the fuck am I ever going to do that? You know, that's how I thought. And I was like, I can't do that. I better work the steps. I can't white knuckle it. That's a, you know, okay, so stuff like that happened. So 3.5 years, I moved to Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I tell people, I got tenderized in Santa Maria, and I got seasoned in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's where those rough edges started coming up. And like I said, that first sponsor gave me that no-nonsense, never say die, hardcore, don't pick up the first rig no matter what approach. Well, I get to Green Bay, and my sponsor I get there is like this like jolly guy, and he's playing guitar, and he showed me how to relax in recovery and how to laugh. And now I'm going to functions and I'm being more social, you know. And he was, and then after that, and these are the things I inherited from my sponsor. So I started with that hardcore, then I got a little streamlined, a little bit relaxed. And then after, and the thing about that sponsor is he stopped being my sponsor. He stopped coming around. And then one day, at about, what did I have? I had like 11 years at the time, okay? And I get this collect call from Winnebago County Jail. Guess who it is? That sponsor that I used to have. I was like, whoa. That was a God shot. That woke me up. That made me tighten my game, okay? And so then the next sponsor I had after him was a guy that he was from the East Coast, and he used to take me to like Food Addicts Anonymous meetings, and he taught me how to like be vigilant about my body. So I'm getting all these like perspectives from these men that have ushered me into this spiritual process, which is what this is. Okay, let me just say quickly, the steps are designed to connect me to a power greater than myself that can help me with my problem. And that's what each of these men did, and they shared with me these facets, you know. So I had all this, and this man, he was very spiritual and very much about how to care for the vessel that's going to be used by the higher power to carry the message. Okay, so then I got that piece. And then the next sponsor I had, which is the sponsor I had before I got back here, was he was into like Native American things. And he taught me how to listen to the sky, you know, and how to feel the earth, and how to smudge with sage, you know, and how to expand my idea of spirituality. You know, and this is like the wealth that I've received in my journey in AA. And now the sponsor I have now, what I'm taking away from him is that longevity can't happen without depth. And he's taking me on a deep journey in the steps and the traditions right now. And it's like blowing my wig. It's like postgraduate work. You know, like I'm working on a doctoral thesis with this guy. But anyway, that's like a little plug about sponsorship. So I get to Green Bay, and I'm in recovery, and I have all these sponsors, and I actually start sponsoring other people. And the first guy I sponsored, I had 5 years. And I took this guy, it took me like 6 years to get this guy through 12 steps because he was a truck driver, right? And so that happened, and I was like, okay, never again. But Eileen said you learn by teaching. And so what I learned from that was that I could do it differently. So then from that point on, I developed this approach that I call the groom and move approach. It's like we're going to move and then I'm going to groom you, okay, because I want to get you through the 12 steps so that you can be ready for the front line and take somebody else through it, you know. And that's what I learned. So I have this thing that I do in the morning that's out of the big book, and it says, the big book says, you know, upon waking, ask what you can do for the still suffering man. Can I have that bottle of water?
It's like a quarter mile.
It says, upon waking, ask what you can do for the still sick man, right? So I did that this morning, and then I wait, and this story that I never heard starts unfolding in my mind, right? And I hope I can remember it. It was flowing this morning, but it goes something like this. There's these three balls of, and I'm almost done, okay? We're going to wrap it up. There's these three balls of consciousness, and they're in this place called Haven. Okay, and Haven is a place where there's no fear, where there's safety, and there's love, and they're waiting to come down to earth to live lives as human beings. So you got these three balls of consciousness. They're in Haven and they're waiting. Well, they're chit-chatting while they're waiting in line to go down the chute, and you know, the first one says, "Well, yeah, man, did you hear they reformatted the protocols for the Earth trip, and now we all have these like instructions that tell us how to get back home, right?" And they're like, "Yeah, well," he's like, check your scroll, man. It's, you probably got one." And then the first one's like, he's like, "Okay," and he reads it and says, "Oh yeah, here's mine, man. I just gotta, let's see, when in doubt, just do these 10 things, you know." So that's his plan to get back. So he's just got to do these 10 things to get back to Haven. So then the next one comes, and he's like, he reads his scroll, and it says, okay, to get back to Haven, get nailed to a cross. Whoa. Okay, so that's his plan to get back. And then the last one comes on and says, okay, his scroll says, don't pick up the first dream. And that was his story. So that's my gift to you. I don't know if it makes any sense. But anyway, I do that. I don't even know if that made any sense. But it was kind of, the moral of that story is, when in doubt, don't pick up the first drink. And that's how you can get back to safety. Okay? So, AA has been very good to me. Okay? I'm learning new stuff about life all the time. I feel very spiritually fit, but I've been learning that there's a material side to life too, and I've never had much respect for money, property, or prestige. I could care less. But what I'm learning is that too can be part of my spiritual development, to live in prosperity and to live in abundance. You know. And that's where I'm at today. And I'm on the third step and the third tradition. And I just want to, I said I'd start with literature and I'd end with literature. And the other piece of literature that I want to share, okay, is the third step prayer. You know, I'm really into that. My sponsor wants me to memorize it, and I just want to bookend this whole thing. Experience, strength, and hope. It works. It does. Okay? But this is where I'm at. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Okay? Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. That's what I aspire to today. I don't have anything to prove to the outside anymore. You know, the steps have diminished a lot of my character defects, and my hope is to stay sober and to stay around here so that, and for you to stay sober and stay around here so that you can all watch me get rich and pretty, okay? And then I can be like, yeah, 12 steps. You know? Yeah. But thanks again, Eileen, Dynamite Stuff, and Derek for asking me to share my experience. I hope you got something out of it. And that's all I have to offer. Okay.
Fantastic. All right. Brevity is the soul of wit, especially if you're a newcomer wanting to get your corporate sign to get the hell out of here.